Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Dr. Matt and Dr. Mike's medical podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Mike Todorovic. I'm joined by my co-host, Dr. Matthew Barton. How are you, Matty?
Good afternoon.
It's morning, so bad start already.
Good afternoon somewhere in the world.
Well, probably is, but not here where it matters. How have you been?
Well, yeah, my wife's close to pop in.
Leaving you. Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yep. When I say pop in, I mean... We're expecting a second child.
Yes. So that's exciting.
Close to 39 weeks.
That's any moment now.
Yeah.
And so that means you're just going to disappear for a couple of weeks.
People do say that.
Yeah.
People do say that.
It's okay, everybody. I know that all that matters to you is that the podcasts are uploaded every single week and they will be. So don't worry. We'll cover you. But when Bub comes, enjoy that time. I've had two. It is not easy. It's definitely easier for me than it was for my wife, and I think you'll probably find the same. I don't know how they do it. They are amazing.
As I said to you, they have more gears than us males. Yeah. They just put into the sixth and seventh.
Yeah.
Whilst, you know, we're still in second gear.
I was in the fetal position.
Revving out.
In the corner, rocking back and forth, sucking my own thumb. My wife basically had three babies to look after when my second came. So, but... congratulations for when Bub comes. Well, today, this is a different type of long-form podcast than we usually do because we usually take like a discrete part of the human body or a function or some sort of system and we talk about it from top to toe. Today, we're taking a very important part of neuroscience, both neuroanatomy and neurophysiology.
Mm-hmm.
And we're actually looking at it through a different lens.
Giving you an update.
Yeah, it really is an
paradigm
update.
Paradigm shift.
Well, that's why
we... Is it that big?
It is. It's really important because okay. I would say that everybody who probably listens to this podcast has been exposed at some point to what we're going to be talking about today. And it's going to... It's totally different to what we had all originally thought.
Or modified. It's not totally different.
It's significantly
different.
It's
just different. Updated.
It's significantly different.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll let you be the judge.
All right. Listeners. Well, let's jump into it. We are today talking about the motor cortex. We're talking about the way that the brain originates motor movement, stimulates the muscles of the body to perform those movements. And we're focusing specifically on the part of the brain where these motor movements originate from and the muscles of the body are mapped to. So if we go back to basics and we go back to the lobes of the brain, now the lobes of the brain are the cortices. It's the outer 2 to 5 millimeters of the brain.
Okay, so we're looking at the cerebrum here, right?
Yes.
And so if we break that into the five lobes, you're saying the outer part of those lobes is the cortexes or
yes.
Cortices?
Well, the outer part of the cortex can be broken up into lobes.
Okay, can I?
Yeah. So the lobes are the cortices. And you've got five different lobes of the brain. So, for example, you've got the frontal lobe, which is sitting at the front of the brain. That's going to be really important when it comes to cognition, higher order reasoning,
executive function,
learning, executive function.
But for today, especially for motor.
Motor movement, yes, which is probably redundant. But
that's right.
Originating motor activity.
That's something I'd say.
It's true. So that's the frontal cortex. But you've got other lobes or cortices. So behind that, you've got the parietal. Behind that, you've got the occipital. On the side near your ears, you've got the temporal. And then deep to the temporal, you've got the insula.
Which we will talk about a little bit today as well.
Yes. But let's focus on the frontal lobe, because we know that right where the frontal lobe meets the parietal lobe, which is pretty much near the crown of your head.
Yeah, maybe a little bit in front of that.
That's sort of where the frontal lobe meets
central
the parietal.
Gyrus.
You've got, that bump up on your brain called the central gyrus.
Sulcus. Yeah. That was a test and you failed.
I did, because I just thought
so
that
the sulcus
you knew.
Is the big valley.
It is. The
valley between the sensory and the motor.
Yeah, it's sort of the line that separates, that central sulcus is the line that separates the frontal lobe from the parietal lobe. And that front-
It's like the Nile Valley.
Yeah, you could. I wouldn't, but yeah, go for it. So anyway, in front of that central sulcus, you've got the pre-central gyrus.
That makes sense.
And that's a bump up.
Well labelled.
Yep. And this gyrus historically was a map, was this linear strip of, bumped
Egypt.
Up brain.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, don't. Everyone ignore Matt's analogies, because I don't think they're working today.
You know, actually, my students the other day said, we really like your analogy with, what did I do?
Oh, here we go.
Constantinople.
Oh,
with the immune system.
Oh, no, they did.
Yes,
yeah,
they did.
Tongue-in-cheek,
like, they're like, awesome.
Was it tongue-in-cheek?
Could have been. Could have been.
I think they were teasing you. And you're sitting there
I can
going,
never decipher.
Wow, that's awesome. And they're laughing behind your back. That's okay. We do that to you all the time. So this precentral gyrus... historically, traditionally, if you open up your neuroscience textbook or any other anatomy physiology.
When you say historically, you're meaning like 100 years, not like back to Aristotle times.
Sorry, I didn't realize that historically wasn't history. Any moment
I just want to
prior
give context
to,
here. It's any moment, 1930s, we're going 1930s.
Any moment prior to today is history, just so you're aware. And if it was spoken about
like
in any moment
history,
prior to today, it's known as being historic. So I stand by my statement.
All right.
Historically.
But I just like to add a bit more depth to this and say, let's go 1930s.
Okay. I'm sweating now. You've worked me up. All right. So yes, 1930s. If you want to frame it contextually, 1930s. From the 1930s till today, your textbooks have shown this strip of the precentral gyrus as being the home of your motor cortex. And you often will have in your textbooks
this man-looking thing that I kind of I like to you.
Well, I was going to say it was quite similar to you, called the homunculus. And the homunculus, this man.
Describe it. Actually, I've got a picture here.
Of the motor homunculus?
Yeah.
So the motor homunculus is a picture of a man, but he's got these exaggerated features.
Yes.
So, for example, he's got large hands, large feet, large tongue. What else is large?
Yeah, the hand in particular is huge.
Yeah.
So it looks like it's got acromegaly.
Yeah.
But yeah, very big face, tongue, mouth.
Yes. And so this homunculus is a representation of what parts of the brain map to certain muscles of the
body.
What part
of the motor cortex?
That's right. And the bigger...
To the contralateral part of the body.
Yeah, so the opposing side. Mm. So the bigger... The part of the brain or the part of the motor cortex dedicated to a muscle.
The more hardware.
Yes. So for example, if I've got so my hand has a lot of intrinsic muscles involved for its movement, for fine motor movement. And so there's a lot of muscles that need to be stimulated from my motor cortex to tell my hand to move.
So is it
Wait a sec. So you've got a large area of your motor cortex dedicated to your hand, right?
But
for example, your back... Where there's not a lot of muscles.
Yeah, but
to
I might push back on that.
You're going to have a small. I'm just saying this is what the motor homunculus map says on in
yeah,
your.
Yeah, I'm okay with that, but I'm not necessarily agreeing with you in the fact that your hand has more muscles to control. I'm saying fine control.
That's
so
what I meant.
It's
to
just
say.
Got so of the muscles of your hand because it's represented in a bigger portion of your motor cortex. It's suggesting that you have more hardware to control those muscles more precisely.
Yes. No, you worded that far better than I did, and that's absolutely correct.
And that's unusual for me.
Yeah. Well, everyone gets one. So so you've got a larger part of the brain.
But that does make sense, right? Because, you know, like, you don't really need to have a fine motor control of your back muscles necessarily. I'm not saying they're not important.
No, but you don't. And that's why you've got a very small part of your motor cortex dedicated to your back.
Yeah.
So when you look at this motor homunculus, small back, small abdomen, big hands, you know, so the areas that require fine motor movement is just larger in this
big
motor
tongue.
Homunculus. Big tongue, right?
Which is important because speaking.
A lot mostly. Of intrinsic muscles within the tongue to allow for us, and intrinsic control of,
yes,
of tongue muscle, I should say, or muscles. So anyway, so traditionally.
That's the paradigm.
Traditionally, when you look at this, it's a strip that goes down the entire precentral gyrus, and you've got now. Do you have a picture in front of you of it? Now, can you say starting from central, right, and then moving more laterally down the side of the motor cortex?
Yep.
What parts are mapped to what parts of the body?
The most central portion, would be the toes.
Yep.
Then it just goes proximally. So toes, ankle, knee, hip. Now it goes into the torso.
Yep.
So it's going to go hip, trunk, shoulder, now into the upper limb, elbow, wrist, and then a humongous hand.
Yep.
Okay. And then discrete areas for each fingers.
Mm-hmm.
And then it will go up to the head.
Right.
So kind of
and then
going
do the face.
Neck, brow, face, huge mouth. Like it's the mouth's open.
Right.
Like it's trying to eat a hamburger.
Tongue. Yep.
And then goes to a separate area on pharynx and tongue.
Right. So that's going from the midline, so right where the hemispheres split, up to the top of the brain and then move laterally down to the side of the brain. So that's following this strip. So basically what you're saying is that the traditional
very linear,
view.
Very linear.
Yeah. It's a very linear view where very discrete areas are mapped to different parts of the body and that's it. That's what we've learned for the past nearly 100 years in our textbooks. And the whole purpose of this podcast.
And how did they, you haven't said this, right? How did they ascertain that?
Well, Penfield and colleagues, Penfield et al., did electrode research where they basically got people or they got monkeys or some sort of non-human primate, and they stimulated parts of the motor cortex and had a look and saw what muscles moved. And so they saw this working for hands and feet and mouth, and they said, okay.
And I think that's the discrete regions that they found.
Hands, feet, mouth.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then they just extrapolated all in between those should just be the rest of the body.
Well, that's the point we want to highlight today is that they were right with hands, feet, and mouth.
Yes.
But the other parts of the body, like you said, they extrapolated and basically said, okay, well, if that's where hands are, this is where arms going to be, and then this is where shoulder, and this is where torso, and this is where and sort of filled in the gaps between hands, feet, and mouth on this motor cortex. And what this latest paper, which is the update.
But I will say, can I just add something there? But they
listeners going to love this. The feedback we're going to get about your interruptions in this podcast are going to be.
That's what makes me. But I think they also said along this line that there was a lot of controversies in this system or this, what would you say, concept.
Yeah.
That even with non-human primates, they did found there was discrepancies to this model that we just outlined, that the non-human primates doesn't fit
this
as
model.
Neatly as this.
Yeah.
So a lot of neuroscientists were like, yeah, this might be just okay, but there's a lot of problems with this.
Yet it was the dogma
within
neuroscience textbooks and anatomy physiology textbooks for nearly 100 years. I mean, I don't remember once reading in those textbooks that this is hypothesized. I read that this is what it is. And I've taught this for a decade. And so this new paper, so a new paper has come out basically updating-
In Nature,
updating our understanding of exactly what's happening here at the motor cortex. And this paper is called A Somatocognitive Action Network Alternates with Effector Regions in Motor Cortex. So there you go. That explains everything. Everyone have a wonderful day. So published in Nature April 19th, 2023 this year. It's only, what, three weeks old. Fresh off the press. Really important paper. Basically, let's talk about what it says. No, let's talk about what they did.
Yeah.
And then we can talk about the results that they got and how it contravenes or updates the paradigm. So what did they do, Matt?
So they basically looked at fMRI studies. So that's the approach they use. So they used an MRI scanner but a functional MRI, which I don't know a huge amount, but just looking at the activity within the brain. So not just an image of the brain, but the activity. And I guess mostly that is blood flow.
Yep.
And you can assume that where you have more blood flow, you have more neural activity.
Yes. Okay. That's what, yeah.
So they did a number of subparts to this study. So they looked at a small number of individuals and then got them to do certain things within the MRI scanner, like just stay still or do very discrete movements, and then kind of process what parts of the brain lit up or what part of the motor cortex, which they called M1, lit up when you did those movements.
Yes.
And then they kind of just got a big reference guide from that. Then once they were confident with those results, then they went retrospectively back to a huge data sets, so up to 50,000 individuals, which I think was termed – it was from Britain, the Human Connectome Project. And so 50,000 individuals, and went back to those and looked whether the results from their earlier stuff matched this.
So they got them in the fMRI and they said, okay, do some fine motor movements, like let's just say moving the fingers or moving the toes. Do some more gross motor movements, so maybe move your whole arm, and do some more complex motor tasks, like let's say handling a particular device in the hand, moving it around, or maybe performing some other more complex movement that recruits other areas of the body.
Yep.
And so then they mapped to the brain each of those, and like you said, then compared to a larger cohort.
Yeah, and that cohort could have been in studies that weren't relevant to this at all.
Sure.
But they just had been able to compare that if in these particular studies they may have done some motor movements and then seen if that matched to that part of the brain.
Yep.
Then they looked at over the age continuum, so they looked at adults, children, I think 9 years of age, infants, neonates, so newly born, and then they did a cross species, so human and macaques, which is a type of primate, and they looked in clinical versus normal models, so post-strokes.
So it's not a bad study.
Yeah.
Like I thought it was a well-done study, well-executed, and the results were very interesting.
Mm.
So what they basically found was that original homunculus somatotype that it's called, or the somatotopography of the brain, so basically the body map on the brain that Penfield –
or in the motor cortex.
In the motor cortex, I should say, coined in the 1930s, is that some aspects of it still stand, yet there's some added things to it that seem to be extremely important. So the new model basically states that there's a dual system there. And so the dual system is this integrate-isolate model. So the isolate aspect is what Penfield stated earlier, that there are discrete areas of the motor cortex.
And there seem to be six areas along that cortex.
Dedicated to hands.
Yeah, so there's
still – what are the six? I thought it was hands, feet and mouth.
Yeah, there's still those.
Yeah.
But then they found areas between those three.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. So that's the six. Yeah, yes.
And they're so what's this and what's this doing? Because this doesn't seem to match the others.
Exactly. Mm. So, you know, when they got them to do, you know, move the fingers, you know, they saw a very specific part of the brain light up that matched with what Penfield said. Same with the feet or toes, and then same with the mouth. But then what they found was that when you start to move the limb, like the upper limb, for example, that it wasn't a linear firing of the motor cortex. It didn't go from one spot and then go up and then move around. It actually was mapped in concentric rings. So you had an area mapped to the hand, and then when you told the arm to move, that a ring area surrounding the hand lit up. And then when you told closer to the shoulder to move, another area further out from that ring lit up. So it's not a linear model, it's a concentric model. And so the only thing that stood the test of this experiment from Penfield to today is the hands, the feet, and the mouth, or at least the upper limb, the lower limbs,
and
the mouth.
The face mouth, yeah.
But everything else seems to be a bit different. Like you said, dispersed between
those
these areas are these new, what we call integrated areas.
Yeah.
And that's why it's a dual system called an integrate isolate model. The isolate is just moving the individual muscles. Yeah. But the integrate is what's really important here. So what what did you find out about what this these integration areas do?
Well, I think, like you said, so maybe if you were just doing tasks where you're just using your fingers and you didn't necessarily need to involve other body regions, that it may remain isolated. But if you were to, let's say, walk, then your body not only has to coordinate the muscles to tell the limb to move. So, for instance, saying, okay, I need to turn on the hip flexors, the quadriceps, the hamstrings, blah, blah, blah. But you have to also coordinate a lot of other body movements at the same time.
The torso, so, the back, swing the limbs.
Yep. And so that's when you're brought in these kind of inter-effector regions.
Yep.
And that would then coordinate other regions of the body to also become active.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
And this is where it's slightly different, is that we knew that the isolated areas for the hands, feet, and mouth, we knew that they did speak to other areas of the brain to help coordinate the muscle activity. So, for example, it would speak to the cerebellum, it would speak to the basal nuclei, it would speak to the thalamus, and it would speak to other parts of the sensory cortex because it needs constant sensory feedback. So we knew that because that's all part of the motor activity and motor movement sequencing and pathway. But these inter-effector areas, these integration areas, they seem to be more holistic. They seem to call upon not just different areas of the body, different muscles of the body, but it seems to call upon different parts of the brain.
Right, that discrete regions of the brain.
Discrete regions that we didn't think were actually involved necessarily in motor activity and motor coordination.
So is this termed as the con?
Term the con. That's right. So
okay, so what were these? What were these?
You tell me.
Okay, so
what
some
were
of
the con regions?
So some of these regions where these within the motor cortex, these interspersed regions that are coordinating further activities in the brain, which is we're going to now refer to as con,
which is cognitive control network.
So it's sent into other parts of the brain. So other parts, for instance, were the cingulate cortex, the anterior prefrontal cortex, the insular, the dorsolateral putamen. Did you say putamen?
Putamen.
Putamen.
Yeah.
The cerebellum and the thalamus.
Yep.
And so these are quite somewhat are fairly neighbouring, but some are quite distinct or far away locations.
And for example, some of the areas that you said are part of the basal nuclei and cerebellum, which these isolated muscle areas we knew or spoke to, but the study shows that they actually talk to these areas in a different way through different pathways. So while they still talk to the same areas of the brain like the cerebellum for coordination, balance, and muscle tone, it actually speaks to it through different pathways than the isolated muscle groups. And so this CON, this cognitive control network, basically is, again, bringing pretty much everything into the picture. And it even speaks to, like, the deep viscera of the body. Like, it's talking to the cardiovascular system and the respiratory system. It's talking to the digestive system. The vascular supply.
And that would be specifically the insular, which I think in that region is the interoception, which would be all those things you mentioned. So temperature, pain, hunger, thirst, regulating internal body activities. So by eliciting motor commands, it's not only refining the movement down, but it's also telling the body, prepare yourself for potentially a whole lot of activity.
Yes, and that's it. It's about physiological preparation. A lot of the time we used to think that if I want to play the piano, a complex movement, that I had to stimulate very specific discrete areas of my motor cortex because that's where the hand is, that's where the arm is, that's where this is, and we had to fire them discreetly but in a pattern sequence way to make it all sort of work together. But now what we're showing is, yes, we may have to stimulate the fingers and arms in those isolated concentric ring areas that we said earlier, but now we have to stimulate the other areas that's basically speak to everywhere else. It's talking to cognition. It's talking to planning. It's talking to execution. It's talking to basal nuclei, cerebellum for smoothing out and coordinating that movement. It's talking to the organs of the body. It's talking to the heart. It's talking to the respiratory system. So that you've got, so overall they're calling it this goal planning region because it helps saying, I know what I need to do. I need to stimulate this area to get it done.
So would you then assume then, going to the example of playing the piano, where this is a learnt movement that you've, and it's sometimes the term some people use is muscle memory, right? Mm-hmm. Where over time you've learnt that skill. It's taken you a lot of hours to get to proficiency.
Yep.
Would you assume then if you were ready to start to play the piano, then the firing will begin in those centres and then go into those other regions? Or is it still potentially in the
I think it would still be
prefrontal kind of planning area?
I think it would still go from the premotor cortex to this motor cortex because you still need the planning part. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's co-activation because it seems to be that activating this area coordinates the entire complex movement. And it's...
And that then makes sense because when you're playing the piano, which is such a coordinated activity,
yeah,
you would need to center areas to the basal ganglia and the cerebellum and the prefrontal areas as well as the somatomotor regions,
yeah,
to be able to execute such a precise movement. Right?
Plus your breathing changes and your heart rate changes and all of those things change. And we used to think that when you, historically, when you stimulated certain parts of the motor cortex, let's just say to go for a run, right? And we thought, oh, we just stimulate the various muscles of the legs, arms, torso in a patterned way to run. And then the rest of the body played catch up. The muscle started moving, then the heart goes, wait a minute, I'm running now.
Mm, that would make sense.
And it responded, and then the respiratory system responded. It now makes sense that it's not-
You've already prepared
someone. You've prepared it. So there is a signal that goes to these organs, amazingly, that says, we're going to run now, so just prepare. Now, it doesn't mean that the heart's going to then start beating crazy from the beginning, but it will beat when it needs to beat appropriately. And same with the bronchodilation.
Or maybe it just kind of, what's the word? Not amplifies, but kind of, I forget the term we use.
Like in preparation. Yeah. Yeah.
It makes it more responsive.
Yes. And it probably does. And so what this new information is basically telling us is that our previous model of the motor cortex is not what we thought it was. One, the map of the body isn't linear. It's the map of the body, especially when it comes to stimulating very specific muscles, is concentric with the distal parts in the middle and then the more proximal parts. So going, let's just say the fingers right in the middle, then when we go to the wrist, to the arm, to the elbow, to the brachium, to the shoulder, then they're concentric rings that go further and further out from the hand. So it's not linear, it's concentric. That's right. The first thing. That's for the hands, feet and face.
And does that mean the hand, like for the fingers, are deeper within that ring or more
they're in the middle. They're right in the middle of the ring.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, right. The hand's right in the middle of the ring and then wrist is further out and then arm further out and then shoulder further out. So distal, right in the center, proximal, furthest out. And so we've got that concentric ring shape for specific muscle activation for hands, feet and face, and then dispersed between these areas are these integration areas.
Inter-effector regions.
These inter-effector
regions. And the interesting thing there is newborns don't have those.
The inter-effector regions? Yeah. Which makes total sense.
But it comes about at about I can't say the time point because they didn't do a whole, longitudinal,
the
but nine-year-olds
yeah.
had these regions that were more like adults.
Interesting. So,
and you can make sense of it. Like, so when I look at my daughter who's two, you just look at how
awkward she is. She falls over like you all the time.
No, just how she's learning from the world all the time, right?
Yeah.
And how just, you could see why it takes a year just to walk.
Yeah.
Because they have to start using muscles, but then understand what they're doing for the body,
yeah.
and then coordinate them, fine-tune them, but then see how it fits with all the other movements and everything else they're doing together. And you could see why it takes so long to do this.
Yeah. The picture that we have now of the brain when it comes to motor activity is now more complex. Generally, as we move through, we tend to like to think that, okay, things are becoming easier for us to understand. This is more complex now. But the benefit here is that we now can understand a little bit better why people who experience strokes.
Oh, so that was going to be my next question. So what's the significance of this? Not just the theory, but maybe clinically.
So what they've been able to see in the past is that somebody might experience a stroke in the motor cortex and they may have some muscle coordination deficit. And generally this tends to happen when it's in the isolated areas. But it seems to be that the great thing about having these inter-effector areas for a more holistic control is that because they have an ability to bring everything together and have movement, that it builds in more redundancy in the system. So you may have a stroke in a part of the motor cortex that may limit one's ability to move their hand, but this inter-effector region can do a job in sort of helping that hand move even without that fine control. So it helps to bring everything together. So it's a bit of redundancy even if that happens. So that's the first thing. The other thing is that it allows for us to understand a bit more now about if we need prosthetics, if we need deep brain understanding where the brain is, deep brain stimulation.
But it's not just tell the muscle to move it, but that area may be important as well.
Yes. You don't want to damage a part of the brain that you thought originally was, let's just say, for the thumb, but it might also stimulate autonomic control of some other function.
Well, what I mean is like you might not, if you wanted to move the hand, you're not just working in that isolated area. You may have to also work in the effector region as well.
Yes. And it might have implications for certain motor diseases as well. So this could include Parkinson's, could include motor neurons, Huntington's, maybe understanding.
Well, something I read this week about Parkinson's that they are proposing.
In the gut?
In the gut.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? Because that's more your area.
When I was doing my PhD in Parkinson's, so this is 10 years ago, I was at a conference and I remember listening to all of these people and I'm like, it begins in the gut. Parkinson's, and this was just a hypothesis of mine. I'm just like.
But were these people shunned then, do you think? Like if they're saying, oh, there's something in the gut that's producing a neurological outcome.
No, people thought it was interesting because there were cases, I think in Sweden from over 10 years ago, where they performed vagotomies. Okay. So the cranial nerve that basically goes from the gut to the brain and vice versa. They did vagotomies. They would cut it.
For too much acid or something.
They would cut it and it would improve symptoms of Parkinson's patients. Or it, and I could be misremembering this,
maybe,
or it limited the likelihood of them developing Parkinson's.
It sounds more right.
I can't remember which one it was.
I think the second would sound more plausible. Once you've got it,
you can't sort of.
Because I briefly skimmed through this paper and it sounded like one particular type of microorganism. If you were to have this colonize your gut from the toxins that it produces within your gut.
Or byproducts.
I think they use toxins, but that could be, you know, endotoxin, exotoxin. Mm. It then, the way that was processed by your immune system, but it maybe was taken through the vagus nerve back into your brain, then would lead to those pathological aggregations.
Yes.
And Alzheimer's is now going potentially down that path as well, that it's looking to be an autoimmune, but locally within the brain, the way that the brain immune response to something is, it's not so much the tangles and the aggregates. That's just
that's a byproduct.
That's what you see. Like, it's like, you know, there's been a big street fight and all you see afterwards is just things broken and so forth.
Yeah.
But what you've missed is what caused the street fight.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Because we used to think that, at least in Alzheimer's, that the tangles, the plaques and the tangles
were it, right?
Yeah, part of the causative.
And I think there's some recent stuff where they've put, antibodies and so forth, and they can actually clear those tangles and stuff away. It doesn't actually reverse.
No, same with Parkinson's. Yeah. You know, you've got protein aggregates in Parkinson's, tau protein aggregates and so forth. And we didn't know whether they were causative or a result of the disease. But it is interesting. But we do know, so, you know, for years I thought, yeah, there is a gut-brain hypothesis here for Parkinson's. But then when I started to really push through my PhD, I was looking at genetic aberrations in genes that were involved in the mitochondria. And so then it started to become quite odd that you'd have mitochondrial dysfunction resulting in Parkinson's disease, and then couldn't link that up. So it could be many roads lead to Rome, right? So it could simply be there are multiple things causing Parkinson's disease, and they all tend to just coalesce at the basal nuclei and the various dopaminergic neurons associated with it, resulting in the disease of Parkinson's, one of which may be a gut-based cause. Others may be genetic aberrations in mitochondrial genes, and others might be genetic aberrations in neuronal synapsing genes. So I think that's likely what's happening, is that there's cause.
Genetic on environment.
Yeah, I think there's no one cause for Parkinson's, and I think it's the same for Alzheimer's. Because if you think about it, you've got at least for Alzheimer's, you've got a loss of brain mass. I mean, this is an important organ that is shrinking due to neurons dying. And there's never going to be one cause for neurons dying. There can be multiple causes for neurons dying. So anyway, that's obviously a bit of a digression, but the point we're trying to highlight is that the neuroscience changes, and it's not because there's a fault or an issue with science. It's because science is iterative. And, you know, I'm not annoyed or angry that I've been teaching the motor cortex in this linear Penfield homunculus model at all, because it gave us insight and understanding of the motor cortex in the brain and how it all works. But the great thing is more research comes out, which updates it. And hopefully we all see the new textbooks being updated soon. I'm not holding my breath. It probably won't be updated for a couple of years because I know what it's like.
Oh, there's a bit of a lag period, isn't there?
There's a bit of a lag period.
Between the updation and how long it takes to come into print.
And it's not easy to write a textbook, I can promise you that. So, look, I hope that everyone enjoyed our little update here on the motor cortex. If you do want to contact us, you can send us an email.
I do think we're having potential issues with our emails at the moment.
All right, I'll double check that. Well,
because we haven't received any for a while, so I think possibly
I've changed the.
Yeah,
I think I bugged.
So if you have sent an email, and we're not stating it on our podcast.
But if you've sent us an email in the last 2 weeks, send us another email, because I will have had it all fixed by the time you listen to this podcast. So gubiosciences@gmail.com, or just go to our website, which is Dr. Matt, Dr. Mike. So DRMATT.
Oh, if you directly send it to gubiosciences, that's fine.
.au.
It's through the website though.
Yes. Okay. So I'll say that again, because Matt decided to talk over the top of me instead of waiting for me to finish what I was saying. Our website is drmattdrmike.com.au. What were you saying, Matt? Sorry?
Oh, the issue with the emails is just from the website, not if you emailed directly to GU Biosciences.
Gotcha. So there you go. Email directly to GU Biosciences if it's easier.
Oh, congratulations, Mike. You hit 500,000 subscribers just recently in your YouTube.
That's funny, because you did also. How coincidental.
Yeah.
We both hit 500,000 subscribers on our YouTube channel, which we're both very proud about. So Matt and I together have what I am very proud of is a YouTube channel where we teach medical education for free, anatomy, physiology, pathophysiology, pharmacology. People tend to like it because 500,000 subscribers.
And we're still – so we've got if you're watching this podcast as a video.
Hi, everyone.
We've got on the wall.
You can watch this video on the YouTube channel,
100,000 subscribers.
And that was only what, was it last year or the year before?
But we don't get one until 1,000,000.
I know.
So if you'd like to send us a plaque for 500,000 in a image form.
No, even better.
We'll put it on the wall.
Okay, we will. That's true. So that's a good
call.
And
when I say plaque, I don't mean an atherosclerotic one. I mean
I've got
an image.
Of those. Or what you could do, which would be even better, is subscribe to our YouTube channel if you don't, to get us to 1,000,000 subscribers so we can get the gold plaque.
Let's do both.
All right, send us a plaque.
I haven't discussed this with Mike, but I'll put it on the wall.
For the next video?
Yeah.
All right.
Send a nice image plaque, 500,000 subscribers.
Yep.
And
what color?
The best one. No, that's their imagination.
Okay.
The best
purple.
One.
Purple. I like purple.
We will put on the wall.
Deal. And we'll make sure we film
and we'll actually rotate through it if we get more than one. We'd get just not my mother replying.
All right, great idea. We're going to do that, and that way the next YouTube video will have that plaque on the wall, and we'll take a photo with it and we'll update our socials with it because I think that's quite good. If you do want to follow us on the socials, you can go to Instagram, you can go to Twitter, you can go to TikTok, you can go to all of your favorite social media platforms and follow me because that's not on social
media.
Quick
question for you.
Firstly, I need to tell people how they can follow me.
Dr.
Mike Todorovic. And that's it. DrMiketodorovic. Matt, would you like
When's your third challenge with
Ninja Nerd? All right. So as everyone knows, my arch nemesis, Zach Murphy from Ninja Nerd. So if you don't know Ninja Nerd, they've got 2 million subscribers for their medical education YouTube channel. Look, they're wonderful people. But Zach is still my arch nemesis. And we're trying to figure out who is the best medical educator in the online space.
Whilst exercising.
Well, not just, just while performing complex tasks. So we're using both the effector isolate or the isolate integrate model here to teach medical education while performing difficult things. So the first task, push-ups while reciting glycolysis. The second task was back squats while reciting the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system.
So you won the first one, he won the second.
Yep.
This is the decider. Now, have you decided on what it's going to be?
Okay, yes. So you'll be first to hear it here. So what we're going to do for the third task is both Zach and I will be blindfolded and we will be performing a YouTube video at the whiteboard on a topic for 10 minutes. And that topic, I believe, from memory,
that's a long time.
Is going to be the, or maximum 10 minutes, the bicarbonate buffer system, which means we have to write up formulas and highlight them and underline them and talk about the respiratory and renal system. And we're doing it blindfolded. So it might be a little bit messy. But
look like my videos.
But you, the listener or watcher, can vote to see who did a better job. So go onto our YouTube channel or my social media channels and have a look to see if I've uploaded anything on this third challenge that we're performing. And if it's there, vote for me. And I've made a trophy for this great MedEd challenge.
Have you?
I have. And hopefully I win it. A physical trophy.
Wow.
It's actually ready for me to
clay?
Pick up now. No, it's made out of likely cheap plastic. And so
that looks gold.
It does. It actually does look gold. So look.
So if he wins, are you going to send it to America?
I will be, yeah.
Okay.
At his cost.
I like it.
Maddie, thank you for today, listener. Thank you. Subscribe, like, leave us a 5-star rating, send us an email, tell us how much you appreciate what we do. If you don't appreciate what we do.
Suggest topics.
Yes, suggest topics. And if you don't appreciate what we do, just don't send us anything and move on. nothing worse than receiving an email that's 500 words saying how much you dislike us.
We don't get that very often.
You do. I just delete them.
That's your dad though.
That's true. That's true. Just throwing slurs at you. Thank you, dear listener, and thank you, Matt.
Have a good afternoon.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.